Hey, this is 11L Radio New York International, and I've got the pleasure to introduce someone who's was a vocal stylist, we should call it, the voice. Now, what I call the voice is one who can make a song their own. And over the years, off the top of my head, the vocal stylist I can think of was Bobby Darin, Conway Twitty, Big Sandy, Sinatra, Joe Cocker, Dylan, Elvis, Cab Calloway, Tony Bennett, and this gentleman who's got this great baritone voice. He's been doing rock and roll, rockabilly for over 40 years, and I take a great pleasure to introduce Robert Gordon to Radio New York International.
Well, how are you, Dave? That's quite a buildup. I don't know if I can live up to that.
Well, you've got the voice, man. You've got the pipes. You got the baritone voice. That your presence on stage is amazing.
Well, thank you. I look a little different than the old days, but
don't we all?
The voice is still here, thank God.
Yeah, and you know, you go back to the days, you know, the classic days of CBGB's, the Rodeo Bar, my father's place, BB King's, South Street Seaport, the Bottom Line, and a million other venues across America. And
yes, we closed a bunch of those.
You did. And you were doing rockabilly, rockabilly revival, neo-rockabilly, rock and roll.
Well, you know, we did it sort of before anybody else was doing it, and it was sort of a I don't know if you could say novelty, but it appealed to the new wave audiences as well as
It was different. It was different, you know, what you were doing. I really didn't get turned on to your music till maybe the late 70s, early 80s. I happened to go into Corvettes on 45th Street, and they were going out of business, and they were writing on records, DEF, meaning defective, opening them up and selling them for like $1.49. And I saw...
Oh, so that's how you met me, right?
That's how I met you, in the cutout bins, back when you were... Back, you know, in 77, 81, when you were just starting out, and Rockabilly, Boogie, and Bad Boy, I looked at the covers, and I said, this guy looks interesting. I have no idea, I have an idea what he does, but he looks offbeat. You know, this is before punk music, before, you know, the Rockabilly revival really took off. And I bought those two records, and then I went back and started buying everything, and I've got, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 records of yours, bootlegs and CDs. And some of them are official, some of them are not, but the one thing I can say, Robert, the consistency on all of it.
Thank you. We try to maintain a sort of, a certain level it's important to me. I like to get involved with the mixing and the production, so at the early albums, I was involved in that respect.
It's funny, I've been listening to probably way too much Robert Gordon the last 3-4 days out of all my... I started playing one after another, and, you know, with between great guitarists with Link Wray, Danny Gatton, Chris Bedding, and the production values, the stuff holds up well today, very well.
It does, you know, and it's amazing. I hadn't listened to a lot of those things myself for years, and it does hold up. It's pretty good, I must say.
You know, I mean, for me, the early days of rock and roll, again, started, you got a couple of years on me. Not many, just a couple. But, you know, Elvis, Buddy Holly, Bill Haley, Chuck Berry. That's kind of with the oldie stations what I would pick up on. But the Gene Vincent, the Billy Lee Rileys, the Eddie Cochran stuff, the deeper tracks, the Conway Twitty, I didn't really know about. And then hearing your versions and then going backwards in time, saying...
Well, it did turn a lot of people onto these people, and I'm happy about that. And it sort of spurred a whole new resurgence of rockabilly bands and, just the whole dress and everything. I mean, there are lots of festivals and things now, but I think we were sort of, we reintroduced people to that whole genre.
And you stayed away from all those oldie shows, those Richard Nader stuff, which was great because yours was original and it was contemporary.
Well, you know, we tried to make it take it to a different level. That's why I worked with people like Chris Bedding, who was a very modern player. In fact, starting July 3rd, we're doing our 40th anniversary. It's going to be exciting. And that's going to be one of the shows at my father's place.
July 7th. July 7th
Anton Chig and Rob Stoner. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And you've got a gig also at Hill Country Barbecue on July 3rd. My Father's Place is July 7th. And the funny thing about you, Robert, is you would put out records and then you would kind of disappear. You would disappear. And all of a sudden, a record would come out from somewhere. I'd go, oh my gosh, look at this. And I'd run and I'd buy it and I'd find it. And this was, you know, before internet, when it was harder to find some of this stuff.
And yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. And it would just come.
There's a lot of independent records that people still don't know that I'm proud of, and it's unfortunate that they're not out there, because there's some really good stuff I'm proud of that people aren't aware of. Like I did they tried to get me to do a Presley tribute for years and years, and of course I shied away from that because I didn't want to get the tag. But we finally did one. And it's called It's Now or Never, and it's just an example of one of the albums that people aren't aware of. It's quite amazing. We have the Jordan Ayers on 9 tracks, and it's that's just an example of one of the independent albums that are out there. But I assume that they'll get heard eventually.
hopefully. I mean, I have just about everything you've ever released. And I bought it real official, so you did get some royalty rights from me, hopefully.
Thank you very much.
If the label didn't rip you off, you know, as you know, you...
That's the old story. I've been there and done that, of course. I've been in the business. Well, you know, aside from the first records I'm known for, I started singing when I was 15, so... I've been in the business a long time.
I mean, I saw you at CBGB's playing with the Tough Darts, which was a period of music that, you know, didn't really fit you, but a couple of tunes you did with the band was great, and my friends, the Shirts, were also on, well, later became my friends.
Oh, my God. Arthur, well, then you do know me from the early days, I guess.
I do know you. You don't know me, but I know you. I've been tracking you, you know. It's scary. So, I mean, and I've seen you so many times at so many. One of the best times that I ever saw you play was at South Street Seaport, an outdoor concert next to that big ship.
We've done so many great shows, and I can't imagine which band that was with. I've had great players with me. I've always been a stickler for when you're in a trio situation, everybody's got to be good, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So from Link Ray, as you said, to Danny Gatton, and now Chris Bedding, of course, who's back in the UK, so it's difficult to put those shows together, but when we do, it's always a lot of fun, yeah.
And you've played with, like, let's see, who off the top of my head, Paul Schaefer was on your early records, Bobby Chouinard. Shannon Ford, Tony Garnier, Gary Talent, Eddie Angel, who's now with the Low Straitjackets. There we go, Low Straitjackets.
Yeah, Eddie's got his own groups, and that was a good record. We did that down in Nashville at Johnny Neal's studio. Johnny Neal is an incredible keyboard player. And in fact, you know, he wasn't, the album turned out to be keyboard oriented. He just came down and said, well, let me just try this little thing. And he was so great that I think that's It's Now or Never. No, I'm saying Satisfied Mind, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was a great record. That was a lot of fun down there.
I mean, Eddie Angel, I mean, his band, they have, since they're an instrumental band, and they're the best in the business.
They are. I mean, he's a great player, and a lot of fun to work with in the studio, because he's creative, and he also takes direction. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Serving suggestion, you should play with Low Straitjackets. I know Nick Lowe has Big Sandy. I'm a big fan of Big Sandy.
I know Sandy, of course.
Good guy. I mean, it's just music.
Yeah, I just saw him at Viva Las Vegas. We did that this year, yeah.
Very cool. I think Sandy's coming to New York doing something.
That's cool. I haven't seen him in New York.
Let's see. Also, you were in films. You were in The Loveless and Unmade. The Loveless was a great movie.
Well, you know, it was Catherine Bigelow's first movie and Willem Dafoe's first movie as well. So some good people came out of that. I was originally hired to do the music, and they actually added some additional tracks that I wasn't too happy about, but that's their thing. But I wrote the theme. It's it's sort of a Gershwin-esque thing. People were shocked when they heard it. And I did, you know, I never tried to recreate an old record, but I did for this movie. I did some Jack things, and I did a Marshall Crenshaw tune in a Gene Vincent style. And so the music is great, and first to admit I'm not much of an actor, but they got me to to act in the thing, and I said, well, I'll do it if I can get that 1955 Harley Davidson that was in the movie, and that was part of the deal.
Ah, nice. Sweet, sweet. And yeah, you mentioned that you did a couple of Marshall Crenshaw tunes. I've been a big fan of him for a while.
I'm going to take credit for discovering Marshall Crenshaw.
Okay.
I got his early... early demos, and of course we put them in my style, but Someday, Some Way, of course, became a big hit, and I did quite a few of his songs, actually, and I'm proud to say that I was there from the beginning for Marshall.
Well, thank you.
He's a great writer, of course.
Indeed, yeah, and also Bruce Springsteen. How did Springsteen hand you a song? How did that work out?
I met Bruce on a Bowery. You know, he came to see me with Tough Darts a couple times, and we became close. We hung out quite a bit back in the day, and he had this song. The story goes that he wanted to get that tune to Presley, and I don't know that he ever did, but he gave it to me before the Pointer Sisters did it.
Right.
And he played on the record with me as well. So, that was a great tune, Fire.
I guess it must have really hurt when the Pointer Sisters went to the Top of the Pops with it.
Well, yeah, you know, that's their production. They had a great production on it. We did it at a very basic. That was Richard Goddard, was my producer.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. It was a great song from the get-go. I knew that, though.
Exactly. So what are your, your quick regrets with the music? I mean, the music business sucks. We all know that, you know?
Oh, I can give you a story that'll shock you. I wrote a song called Don't Act Like You're in Love. And when I left RCA, I was looking for a new deal. And I was working with David Sonnenberg, Meatloaf's manager at the time. And he took me to Clive Davis. And I was already to sign with Atlantic Records. You know, I figured this was. And it turns out he wanted my song for Supply's next single. And of course, I was so fucking pissed off. Excuse my French.
You can curse on Radio New York International, not a problem.
Okay, well, you're going to bleep it anyway.
No, I'm not. It's going to go through.
He wanted that song for Air Supply's next hit single that I wrote. And, of course, I thought that was my ace in the hole to get a new major deal. So I didn't give him the song. And, of course, in hindsight, I could kill myself because I would have made a fortune on that record. But that's one of the stories of the Naked City, one of those music stories for you.
And, you know, Private Stock Records, you know, was a fledgling label that went down the toilet, you know, and dragged you down.
Larry Utah was the president, and he was Bell Rivers back in the day. He was a terrific guy. And they were not, they were a big independent at the time. They were, you know, well known, and Blondie's on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they were successful. Frankie Valli was on the label, you know. So there you go.
And then you went to RCA, which was, you know, Elvis's label. Must have been you were
that
on.
That was the epitome for me. I had made it when I was with RCA.
But
I
the mean, music you know, business didn't so- get you. They didn't get you. You know, it didn't. It didn't cross over to, you know, there was rock and roll station, so you were like a novelty act to rock and roll because you really weren't rock and roll. Even though you did rock and roll.
I did country, too. They didn't know quite what to do with me, yeah.
Right. I mean, your albums had country, rock and roll. You had some new wave going on, you know, particularly,
yeah.
You know, on...
Well, you know what happened, Dave, and I must say this is a fact. I got more airplay than anybody. I mean, I'm serious. My records were played constantly. Make Believe, Someday, Some Way, Rockabilly Boogie, red hot. I mean, I got tremendous airplay, and it was, but unfortunately, it was right before MTV. Because if I had been on MTV, I could have been huge.
Right, you had the look. You had the look.
I mean, people that didn't even do gigs got huge because of MTV.
So what happened? I mean, you didn't think MTV was right for you? I mean, how did that?
Oh no, I missed it by 2 seconds. That's when I left RCA.
Ah.
I missed MTV by that much, and I would have been a huge star because with the airplay I was getting, it would have just exploded. So, you know, I can't complain. I did pretty well in the 80s, but and I've got a good enough fan base so that I work quite a bit, so I'm not complaining.
And you've been in the business for 40 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
many years ago, there was a little blurb, I think in the New York Post, in 1995, you know, Robert Gordon was mugged, he was, you know, slashed.
Oh, God.
And
it was horrible.
And I saw that, and I said, man, I like this guy. You know what? I would buy a CD, so I sent money to whatever the person who was collecting.
God bless you. You know, they did a fund for me because, I mean, it was I almost died. I mean, there were five thugs that beat me down and cut me very badly. If I hadn't chucked my chin on her, they would have cut my throat. That's what they tried to kill me. So,
wow.
You know, I mean, I've still got some pretty horrendous scars, but I healed pretty well, thank God.
Well, that's good. I mean, I saw that in the paper. John Lightning, who puts me on the air, is also a big fan of yours. And we both sent generous donations. And then I reached out to you many years ago. But, you know, the 90s was a difficult time. You know, I knew in your life things were going on. So I understand, my friend. I understand. And I'm glad everything worked out.
Well, thank you for that. And I tell you, you know, there were so many great, generous people that that contributed at that time because it was a pretty dark period for me. But you know, I when I first saw myself after they finished, there was 300 stitches. It was that bad. It was inside and out, and I cried. I thought my career was over because I looked like Frankenstein for a while. But I'm back, and then you know. And the fans are better than ever. And listen, Dave, I appreciate your call, and I'm looking forward to meeting you, I hope, when we play my father's place.
Yep.
I've got to run.
Okay, listen, Robert, thank you kindly. One more time, my father's place is July 7th. July 3rd is Hill Country Barbecue. Check out Robert Gordon. Tell him you've heard him on Radio New York International. And, my friend, I look forward to meeting you. Thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Be well. Bye-bye.